The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro, Micro and Small Cap News on Friday. What is it, 27th of March, 2026. Where have you been? Hey! Haven't done a podcast, because when I hit the record there, it shows the last podcast, since the 6th. And I do apologise. I mean, it has been a turbulent market. And I know some people quite enjoy listening to, you know, people's thoughts. Part of me, well, a couple of reasons I haven't done it. Been very, very busy. It's been results season. And it is quite hard, you know, not hard, I suppose. It's the wrong, I mean, there are jobs out there that are hard. What I do is not hard. I love it. But it's quite, you know, labour-intensive from a mental and finger point of view, tapping on the keyboard point of view, inputting lots of data in the website when it's results season. And by the time I've done that, I don't fancy doing a podcast the other day. And sometimes I've been still inputting figures, you know, into the website late in the afternoon, which is when I do the podcast generally. So I haven't had this sort of motivation. And also, there's been lots of exciting website updates on my website, sharepickers.com, which will make it easier going forward. I've now tapped into AI. Yeah, it is good. It is for certain things. Like, just for, you can see, I'll give you an example. If a company releases, you know, full year results, half year results, something like that, to input all the data into my website can take me, because what I do is you input all the new figures, yes, this year's and last year's or this year's, and then you look at the broker comments, like, get all that stuff, put that on the website, broker forecast, put that there, and then I do comments, update the chart, all that stuff, and all the forecast numbers, all the broker comments, all the news, all that stuff. So it can take between 20 and 40 minutes, depending on how much change there is to the forecast, all that stuff, and how much stuff, copy and pasting and formatting you have to do. Take about 40 minutes maybe, maximum do one, 20 minutes if I'm quick. And so, you know, on Tuesday, you have like sort of, you know, 10 companies releasing news. It takes a bit of time, and then you realize some brokers don't release notes, so you come back later and do that and update that. It takes a lot of time to do it, you know, and once you've done, you know, 10 of those in a row or 5 of those in a row, the day is gone, pretty much, you know. But with AI, I realize I can extract this data. Well, let's say, for example, it takes me, say, 5-10 minutes to punch in all, you know, the income statement, balance sheet, EBITDA, cash flow statements, forecast. It takes me, say, 5-10 minutes, maybe 15 minutes to do that. AI can do that literally in a minute. And so I've just figured out a way of doing that on the website. And so now I can literally do that, get them all done, you know, with a couple of hours, hopefully, and then leave me, free me up for the podcast in the evening. But this, yeah, AI is brilliant on certain things, you know, and you can see why it saves so much money for companies and time. And eventually, a lot of people will be sacked. Of course, they do talk about this thing where they say, oh, listen, the thing is, the companies are saying, aren't they, it'll create new jobs. And people say, what jobs are those? So, well, we don't know what jobs they are yet because it's hard to predict. We can tell you which jobs will be lost, but not which jobs will be created. And they give the example of, well, if you go back, like, say, 30 years, there was no iPhone repair person around. But there is now. See? But robots can do that. So it's quite worrying as to where these jobs will come from. I assume, you know, there will new roles will be created, but I don't know if they'll be equal to the amount of jobs that are being lost. So I think it's a net negative for employment, isn't it? If you look at robo-taxis, for example, 15 million work in that sector around the world. You're not going to need a driver for every car that's being driven by a robot. Well, you know, it's autonomous, basically, are you? I heard a story of the Joe Rogan podcast, and apparently Waymo had a problem with the car. Apparently, Waymo picked up a passenger, and the passenger had something in the boot. So they got, you know, their stuff out of the boot. They forgot to shut the boot. So a homeless guy just jumped in the boot. Nice and warm, nice little area there. Better than living on the street if it's cold on the street. So then Wayne with his car went off to the next passenger to pick them up. And they opened the boot to put something in it. This homeless guy jumped out. That is not ideal, is it? It's not ideal for, like, literally, in a Waymo is a brand name. They say, oh, that's a problem we have to look at, yeah. But now one homeless guy's done that, thinking, hey, guys, I've got an excellent idea for a nice warm, you know, sleep at night. Just jump in a Waymo boot. Brilliant. Anyway, sorry, I'm banging on. The title of this podcast is, could this sell-off be a once-in-a-decade buying opportunity? And by that, I mean there's going to be a sell-off. But whenever there's a sell-off in the markets, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be, you know, the doom monger here. I see it as an opportunity to buy. Because the markets generally, you know, look at the indexes like the S&P 500, whatever, the FTSE 100, they always go up in the end, you know? It's just, it's not a question of, you know, if they'll go up, it's when they'll go up and how long the sell-off will be. But if you want to keep an eye on wherever the markets are going, the direction of the markets, keep an eye on bonds. And I didn't really pay too much attention to bonds until about 2021, I think, when interest rates started going up. Because there hadn't been, you know, I started investing just before the dot-com crash. Good timing, eh? Yeah. And so there was no problem with interest rates pretty much until, you know, we haven't had an interest rate cycle hike like we've had from, you know, 2021 to the last couple of years. And so you realise the effect it has on the markets. So bonds are where to look. Bonds reflect the global economic sentiment and they inform what will happen to equities, namely the stock market. However, you've got to be aware of what is affecting bonds. At the moment, that's the oil price. If you want to see what's happening to equities, look at the oil price. If the oil price spikes up a little bit, equities, well, bonds, you know, tend to sell off, yields go up, and equities sell off. So that's the relationship. Keep an eye on the price of oil. It's now traded above $100 a barrel for 11 trading days, or 14 days, two calendar weeks. And a rising oil price means the price of pretty much everything goes up. The longer this goes on for, the worse the economic impact will be, and it's not just oil suffering a supply shortfall, okay? There's lots of other commodities, and I'll give you an example. So crude oil, 20-25% goes through the Strait of Hormuz. Then you've got LNG, about 20% goes through there. That's for, obviously, electricity, industrial heating. Qatar halted all exports, and Asian spot prices are up 143%. Helium, 33% goes through the Strait of Hormuz, and that's involved in cooling for semiconductors, MRI scanners, irreplaceable for chip making and cooling medical magnets. Then you've got sort of urea and ammonia. 30% goes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's nitrogen fertilizers. 28% price hike in the last 3 weeks threatens 2026 crop yields. And you've got sulfur. About 25% goes through the Strait of Hormuz. Sulfuric acid, battery metals, essential for leaching copper, nickel, and cobalt for EV batteries. Then you've got naphtha and LPG. 24% or 30% goes through the Strait of Hormuz. That's for plastics and petrochemicals. South Korea and Japanese plant cuts production by 50% because of that. Aluminium, 10% goes through that strait. Used in auto, aerospace, packaging, supply swing from UAE, Bahrain lost, prices up 10%, and methanol, significant amount goes through their Strait of Hormuz. That's for adhesives, paints, fuels, futures surge 10% and disrupts construction of auto supply chains. So this is a serious issue. It's very serious. And when, you know, prices go up, means inflation's on the horizon, central banks maybe hiking interest rates. We've gone now from, you know, a month ago, it was expected the central bank, the Bank of England, to reduce interest rates twice this year, down to about 3.25%. And now, about a week back, there was suggestions of 3 rate hikes. Now, you imagine the change in direction for equities when that happens. You've gone from an outlook which is looking at lower interest rates to now going up. Not even staying where they are, but going up. High bond yields, which, you know, goes in conjunction with interest rates rising, means the cost of government debt or servicing as debt increases, meaning there's less money to spend on education, health, law, defence, infrastructure. They'll probably have to raise taxes because of that, making people poorer. More businesses will go to the wall, meaning less tax take. Higher interest rates also means people can afford less. So anyone paying a mortgage or anyone on, you know, trying to buy stuff on credit, all that stuff becomes more expensive. Businesses' debt becomes more expensive, so they make less profit or bigger losses if they're in loss territory. They also expand less because it costs more to raise debt. So they tend to lay off more people or employ less people. It's a vicious circle of no growth and inflation, or just termed stagflation. So I think if we get to the stage where you see central banks in the UK, in Europe, in America, raising interest rates, it's going to be a worry. It's going to be a massive worry. So if this war carries on, even for a few more weeks, the markets will probably have a major correction downwards. So far, I know it's been a bit painful, but it's been quite orderly drop, like a correction you could experience once a year. You know, a couple of percent here, maybe 0.5% just one day. But it hasn't really had that breakneck sell, panic sell down. And I think if this carries on for another couple of weeks, we will see a sell-off like we've probably not seen in the last 5 years, 10 years. Maybe we last saw it in, you know, again, Captain Chaos in America created the last one in April of last year about tariffs, which is ridiculous. You know, the premise for that was nuts and crazy anyway, where you're suggesting that looking at deficits and going half on the tariff. Deficits are not tariffs. And that's what he was looking at. But I think if they do, I think it's a complete mistake. If central banks raise interest rates, it's a complete mistake. This is not demand-driven inflation. This is not people with, you know, loose money and free money spending like crazy. And demand has gone through the roof, and so, you know, prices go up. This is a supply shock. This is quite scary. I mean, it'll be quite scary if this carries on. If the drop happens, if you're fully invested, it is quite scary, but it will bounce back. I mean, if you have cash, it is an opportunity. But I think if central banks, you know, raise interest rates, it'll be a big sell-off. And I think they'll realise they've made a massive mistake here, and they'll be fearing for their domestic economies. You'll see, you know, we are already flatlining in the UK pretty much, but I think we'll hit recession. Not just a technical one, a proper recession. And what that'll do then is have the opposite effect of what they want to achieve, and I think they'll start reducing interest rates. And that will you know, ignite the markets, I believe. After a big sell-off, interest rates go up. But interest rates are the sell-off will happen. And then interest rates, or bank, you know, central banks do about turn. And that, after a sell-off, will fuel a massive rally, I believe. And whose door do we lay the blame for this at? Captain Chaos in the UK. This is one tack of trade he's not in control over. He can post whatever he wants on Truth Social, inverted commas, truth. But he's discovering this war is a lot trickier to end than it was to start. There's a rumour that the US are putting boots on the ground. What? Did you see that clip in 2024? Where he specifically said he's not going to start wars, and specifically not with Iran. And now he's going to the point where it's gone beyond bombing. There's rumours they may be putting troops on the ground. If that happens, it'll only escalate things. If American troops, you know, go on the ground and they get fired on by Iranians, they're now in full conflict, in combat on the ground with Iranians. You may even get Russia helping Iran, supplying them weapons, whatever. And this would be a recipe for Trump's very own Vietnam War. And we know how that ended up. By the way, if you're looking to get into, if you don't have a fund, then, you know, it's rallied S&P 500, for example, is the gold standard tracker fund. Okay, so the biggest and best companies in the world and the S&P 500. It's not a question of if they'll recover, they always recover. From 1920 up until present day, taking into account all the big crashes, all the big sell-offs, all the big recessions, you know, from the Great Depression, the Great Financial Crash, the dot-com bubble, everything, it has returned between 7 and 8% a year. That's including all those dips. So if you want to go into a fund like that, which, you know, if you do buy on a once in a decade, if we do have this big sell-off, you only have to buy it, you know, at those levels, start scaling in at those levels once, and you'll be do well for the rest of time, pretty much. But if you want to start buying it and you know about charts, look at the relative strength index and look at when the RSI, relative strength, goes below 25. It doesn't happen very often, once or twice every 5 years, but it's a massive buying opportunity. So when that spikes down, and you'll find it hard to buy in those times because fear will be at the max. People will believe that's it for the stock market. You know, it'll be on the news, everything. That's when you buy. The RSI below 25, you start buying then. Normally the first big dip isn't the only one. But you start buying then and you'll find, you know, just whack on a monthly sort of, investment plan, and you'll be buying at a very good level. Okay, I'm not going to talk about too many companies here because, there's a bit of a sell-off across the market. So for people who are members of the Shapeikers Investment Club, then by all means, go on the Microcap database because I've done a lot of updates this week. A lot. In fact, I'll do a couple of my own because I like to talk my own book. You know, please do your own research. But I tell you what I'll start off with, right? One thing I've realised when it comes to investing in stocks, all right, is that never completely write off a stock with the reputation of a dirty mongrel dog. A dirty, flea-bitten, stinky, scruffy mongrel dog. Never do that. I've done that in the past. I've had companies where they've seemingly have good technology, and it's all been about the story because the revenue hasn't grown or the profits haven't grown and they're disappointed on earnings year after year after year. But I've done research on the company. The technology seems very good. It seems good, but they keep missing, you know, on revenue and stuff. And you realise the technology is good. It's just, they're dealing with big contracts or big companies and they're not control of it. So, and there's a couple of companies I've invested in like that now recently. And I tell you the companies I missed out on because I believed in the technology, but I just fell out of love with them and didn't trust, the company anymore. And two of those were like Filtronic, which of course did like a couple of 1,000% or 1,000%. And also SRT Marine, which I didn't trust. And I invested in it, got out when they had a bit of a scandal and it shot back up and did 100% or something, 200%, whatever it was. So sometimes it's worth keeping an open mind on companies. So I'm going to mention a company now that's I've invested in, that's had a dog of a reputation, okay? But I decided to learn from Filtronic and SRT Marine, not just close my mind on it. Keep an open mind. And the dog is, put your hands over your ears if it's almost a swear word. The dog is S4 Capital. And I mentioned these a while back to investors or members of the club. Now, if you don't know what S4 Capital is, it's in advertising, right? It's founded by Sir Martin Sorrell. On the bottom of the RNSs, they have this. Sir Martin Sorrell, he was the highest paid FTSE 100 boss a while back. Anyway, Sir Martin Sorrell, was CEO of WPP for 33 years, building it from a £1 million shell company in 1985 into the world's largest advertising and marketing services company with a market capitalization of over £16 billion on the day he left. So I assume, of course, they acquired a lot of companies and their market cap went up. It wasn't a straight line from 1 million to 16 billion. But nevertheless, in fact, let me put the chart of that up. Let's see, WPP. But yeah, back in, where is it? Yeah, back in, what is it? In 1995, it was like £2 a share, went up to 12 quid a share. Was that the high? No, couldn't have been. No, went to 19 quid a share. It's a good return there from £2 a share to £19 a share. It's a nice return there. Now, the problem with S4 Capital, I don't know if you're aware of what happened. It came to the market, low interest rates, of course, 2018, 2021, at the end of the sort of bull market, good period of bull market from 2018 to 2021. Right? And then from 2021, it experienced a perfect storm. And this perfect storm was made up of three things, basically. First of all, interest rates went up. And it had a pile of debt from acquisitions. Against this was a backdrop of a slowing end market, the advertising market, of course, when interest rates goes up and, you know, and business economic activity slows, then advertising is one of the first budgets companies cut. And on top of this, you had the acquisitions, which were in a structure of like 50% cash, 50% equity in S4 Capital. So with the share price going down, you had all these founders who were acquired by S4 Capital selling their shares. They had a pretty much a lock-in of 12 months to 18 months. And they did, like, I think it's either 22 or 30 acquisitions between like 2018, some of this, and 2022. Yeah, a crazy amount of acquisitions. Phenomenal amount, you know. And so the share price, you know, took off like crazy in a low interest rate environment, took off from like £1 in 2018 up to £8.70 in 2021. So again, a cracking gain. And then, by the time it's, you know, interest rates come up, so £8.70 in 2021, September 2021, it hit a low of 16 pence in November 2025. From £8.70 to 16 pence in November last year. But if you've been paying attention to their recent trading updates, because I think when you get someone like Martin Sorrell, you know, he's not going to just go out in a poof of smoke, because he's getting on now, what, 70-odd, 76, I think, something. And this is his last vehicle. Is he really going to go out on, you know, a failed business? You know, when he previously had a cracking business, one of the best performing businesses in the world, taken from that shell company up there. I think, is he really going to end his career on a bum of a company? So if you've been paying attention to the recent trading updates, you'll notice that two of the three problems that existed are being sorted, they're melting away. So the three problems were, as a reminder, softening end markets, they still sort of exist. Debt, that is coming down rapidly. And sales of stock from former owners, pretty much done. They're all done, it looks like. Like I said, the locking period was like 18 months, 12 months, 18 months from 2021, 2022 onwards. So by 24, 25, they're done, pretty much. So just looking at the figures here on S4 Capital, okay? Let me just go into it here. So if you look at the finances, be careful not to understand, you know, what is a cash cost and what isn't, because they've had a lot of write-downs and impairments, or just a bit dive, you know, all that stuff, due to these acquisitions becoming less valuable because of softer end markets. Okay, so looking back at the half year results last year, and they had revenue of 328 million just for the first 6 months of 2025 up till the 30th of the 6th, 328.2 million, down 13% from 376 million. Okay. Net loss of 22.3 million, which increased from 13.7 million. Net cash, or net debt, I should say, 142.2 million versus 139. Look at the free cash flow, right? Up 105% to 33.7 million. From 16.4. Now, for the full year, they just announced their full year results this week. Top line, yeah, softened. This is a margin story, okay? Because their end markets aren't growing. Now, their clients are massive. They've got special relationships. Just Google it. With Google, with NVIDIA, with BMW. The biggest clients, and they're more tech-based than but they're digital only and tech-based. So at the moment, most of their partners, their clients, are spending a lot on AI CapEx. So they've switched their marketing spend from OpEx, pretty much, marketing, to building out these data centers. So top line is not the story here. The story is margin improvement. Now, for the full year, there's net loss of 24.8 million, okay? For the half year, it's 22.3 million. So only 2.5 million in the second half. Look at the free cash flow. Like I said, the loss is not cash. It's impairments. So the free cash flow went up 70% to 121 million from 71.8 last year. The net debt went down from 140 million to 83 million. They're now going to be 1x EBITDA from where they were 3-4x EBITDA. I think their banking covenants were at 4.5 or something like that. But they announced a trading update back in November, which was a bad downgrade. And then they announced another one saying, in fact, it's not going to be that bad. We've got a very good Q4. Net debt is going to be below estimations of 100 million. And so looking at this, you realize they don't have to grow top line. If they become profitable this year, which they will be, because these impairments are now washed out, and they are generating free cash flow, their valuation is worth looking at. Because they're literally trading on what? Let me scroll down here. They're literally trading on about 4x EBITDA, if that. And they've also started paying a dividend, which at current levels is a yield of 4.13%. So they're generating cash, and they can afford to pay the dividend. And they're also thinking about now share buybacks, which, if there's any loose stock hanging out there, it'll do very well. Now, if this does well, I mean, just to go over the background story here, and I wouldn't get carried away, because the advertising market is changing very rapidly, okay? But here's five things to think about when you're doing your research. Radical cost discipline, headcount resizing. So they've moved aggressively to align its costs with a more volatile revenue environment. They've reduced their headcount by 11.5%. The company ended 2025 with 6,345 monks. They call it monks because that's the major company they acquired. It's doing most of the work. Down from 7,100 last year. Operating margin expansion. They're now saying operational EBITDA margin is to rise to 12.1% in 2025. And they see further 100 basis points increase in this to 13.1%. And they're going to get their cost base in line with the advertising standard, which is about 68%, I think. So the people they employ is 68% of revenue. And they're at about, they were 78%. They're down to about 74%. So this is about a cost discipline and margins improving. It's about a margin story. And when you talk about a margin story, it's more about value, okay? And you assume, they assume in a couple of years' time, whenever all these big companies have finished expanding their data centers, they'll switch back to OPEX rather than CAPEX spend. And if they do, then S4 Capital are in the ideal position for this because, like I said, they've got some massive clients. So the AI engine, transformational partner, this is worth noticing. They've moved away from being a vendor of ads and toward being an infrastructure partner that builds proprietary AI engines for global whales. Now, they term these clients as whales, who generate 20 million or more for them in revenue in a year. So they're building engines, not just assets. The Monks.flow platform, they build custom AI ecosystems for clients like BMW and Google. Yeah, they build AI engines for Google. They've got 600 employees working on Google. And they've also got a special unit for NVIDIA, which is a partnership. It's not just a client. They're a partnership with Google. So you realize they're quite good at this because they actually help Google with their AI engines. So for example, what they've done previously is the ad agencies worked on a billable hour. If you had a client and they want to come with a sort of, you know, some kind of marketing program system, whatever, and they want to do advertising spend, you'd create an advert for them and they'd write copyright and all this stuff. They do all that stuff and they charge you per hour. It's billable hours, a bit like the legal profession. And we know that's being wiped out by AI. S4 Capital are not doing that. They will create these AI engines for you, give you all the assets, they'll consult with you, but it means you can literally create your own adverts. You can look at these AI engines will also test social media channels, everything, see what gets the most impact. And they can help you with that, of course, who set you up. And say, well, how does that work? If you're given the AI and all the tools, they can work on their own. Why is S4 Capital needed? So they've moved on one of the first movers in a subscription model. So you play for this platform, and you pay on a monthly basis, okay? Yet a lot of other advertising agencies are stuck on this billable hours, so they're trying to move away from that. They're finding it very hard. And of course, if they don't move away quickly, AI will undercut them. And you can't just put someone from your marketing agency in charge of AI. It's a lot to understand. Now, monks have become experts in this area. And like I said, they're now creating adverts for companies, and they can do like 50 adverts in literally a couple of hours. Previously, it would take a couple of months. And they can test them very quickly and train you to do them. And for that platform they give you, you pay a subscription model. So it's very interesting. You've got to look at the massive balance sheet de-risking. You know, the net debt has collapsed pretty much. Fell to 86.9 million, below the guided range of 100 to 104 million. And also got cash flows and dividends happening. So, you know, dividends are being paid and they say they're going to go to buying stock back. So, and the valuation, you know, if you look at Jefferies, the broker, reckons they should be target price at the moment for the next year, for the next 12 months, 43 pence, which is 100% upside. And they say, Jefferies notes that the 11.5% headcount reduction in 25 has right-sized the business. They believe the market is still underestimating the impact of these cuts because the costs were removed throughout 2025. Their full benefit will annualize in 2026, creating a spring load effect on margins, even if revenue growth remains flat. And it probably will remain flat. And in fact, they did mention a softening Q1 because of the Middle Eastern problem. So I'd expect nothing to wow you in the Q1 update. And in fact, it may be a buying opportunity. And let's be honest, it's still a risky thing. The ad marketing sector is changing rapidly because of AI. But so you've got a question. Is S4 Capital at the heart of this AI, or will they be a victim of it? Right now, they're still on sort of, they charge, I think, per output rather than per hour now, and they're switching to this subscription model. I think they've got one big whale on this subscription model. They want to get 25% of their revenue from this recurring subscription model by the end of 2026. Will this happen? There's still a lot of questions as to whether this happens. But I just think, even look at the margins and their cost reduction, puts them now in a strong position from a balance sheet perspective going forward. You take away the fact that any sellers have had the opportunity to sell have probably sold, because we're now at 26 pence and did get it at 16 pence. And it's just a matter of time before the big companies, the whales, or whatever they have as clients, switch their CapEx spend to OpEx spend. I think if it does achieve what they hope it'll achieve, make no bones about it, it'll be a multi-bagger. When you're talking about, you know, 670 million of top-line revenue and improving margins on that, they don't need a lot of margin improvement to do well, to be seen as very undervalued, I mean. And when you're paying a dividend of 4% yield, you know, it's still risky, you know, but it's one of those ones, it's almost like, you know, high risk reward play. And the risk is coming down on it. But it's one of the ones, if they do well, it could do very, very well. You know, it could be taken out by someone, you know, by another company, because there's a lot of change going on in this industry. And I think there was a good quote, I forgot what was said now, but it said something like, there's no other company, small cap company listed in the UK with this client Rolodex of clients. Like I said, they have the biggest clients in the world. They got clients like Facebook, Google, Nvidia, BMW, General Motors, the biggest clients out there. And yet it's like literally a small cap. 180 million market cap. So it does seem at the moment, if you're looking at the actual numbers and what they could be doing, it does seem quite undervalued. But so there's a lot of moving parts here, and it's still high risk. So, but I always like stories like, and it is still much a story, but it's not really a story because they're generating sort of free cash flow. But I think it's, you know, you can look at the numbers and say it's improving. Yes, from a poor position, but it's improving, you know. So, and whether they then get back to growth is another question. But have a look at it. Like I said, you know, this is Martin Sorrell's last sort of run at it kind of thing. And I said, I'm not going to go on. Just because I've spent a lot of time on S4 Capital, don't think, you know, you should go 100% on it and go crazy on it. I'm just saying it's worth a little research. You know, do some research on it, that's all. Dig into the numbers and look at the background story. And you realize just the fact that, you know, debt is coming down, sellers have gone, the margins are improving, the balance sheet's improving, they're paying you know, dividend. Maybe worth a look. You know, do some research. That's it for me. Have a lovely weekend. Don't panic too much. In fact, let's look at the markets quickly before I go. Let's have a look here. All right, FTSE 100. Well, pretty much flat. 9,967. Stock 600 down close to 1%. S&P 500, it's now down 1.2%. This is down, where are we at? From the high, which was, back in January, it's now down 8.4% from that. The FTSE small cap, wow, that's down quite a bit. Down 1.1% from the high, down 10%, FTSE small cap from the high at 71881. Russell 2000 down 1.3% today at 2459. The FTSE 250 down 1.5%. That's from the recent high. Literally straight down we've gone here. Down 11.7%, FTSE 250 from the recent high. Where's the FTSE 100? That's dropped quite a bit. It's down over 1,000 points from the high in February. That's down 8.7%, down from the high. What else we've got here? NASDAQ, that's dropped off a little bit. Again, that's down. NASDAQ's in correction territory, down 12% from its high. Anything else? The FTSE, I always look at the world index is worth looking at. That's just dipped below the last 2 days, dipped below the 200-day moving average, which is quite ominous. I mean, I went to cash, largely cash. I was 34% in cash for the last 2-3 months. And then the weekend after the attack, I went to I'm now at 75%. In fact, 70% is in a money market fund and 5% in cash. So I'm sitting there thinking, this could get worse. And I think there's a potential of this sell-off. It's probably the first time ever I've maybe, you know, timed the market okay. So there we are. And trying to tell the market is a fool's game. FTSE World is down 8.7%. The AIM-ALL share, wow, that's taken a bit of a smacking on the backside. Its backside is sore here. Down 15% from its high back in January. Brent crude. There's something wrong with Brent crude, right? I'm seeing the volume go through like crazy. It'll pop up. Yesterday, it hit my $108 alert on the chart. I kept looking at it and it's $102. So what's going on? So it'd pop up and come back down. That tells me there's a lot of volume going through. At the end of the day then, ended up $108. So the spike yesterday was $110 or this morning, and it keeps hitting that and then popping back down. So it suggests to me this is going back to that $110. By the way, $112 is the highest close. We're not far off that. And that's what I keep an eye on, Brent crude oil. It's staying up here, the longer it stays elevated for, the more damage it does to the rest of the world economy. And that's the worrying thing. Trump is there, you know, blaming Nathan for not helping. And so we're pathetic. You are, you know, helping. Hang on, mate. You started the fight on your own with Israel. You didn't tell anyone else. And now you're blaming NATO for not helping you. What? Nuts, isn't it? It's like having a troublesome uncle or, you know, cousin who always gets in fights and starts fights without you knowing and then blames you for not helping out. What are you talking about? I wasn't even me. He's mad, isn't he, Captain Chaos? Anything else? Bitcoin down 4.25 cents to 65,000. Bonds are up. Gold, it's been dropping, but it's up to date 2.7% to 4,498. Silver, where is silver? Silver's having a bit of a rally. It has come down quite a bit. Silver's down like 41% from the high back in January 26. Gold is only down about 18%, I think. There we are. And of course, selling begets selling. So the bigger the sell-off you get, the more people panic and the more they sell. So that's the problem with the markets. When you get this breakneck sort of increased, you know, accelerated velocity of sales coming through and people start panicking. So it may not even be, you know, related to accurately the fundamentals behind it. But because people start selling, other people start saying, I'm selling, why? Everyone's selling, why? It's just scary. Then you do get this, you know, accelerated fall. And so you get 1% drops, 2% drops. That scares even more people. They become 3%, 4% drops. And then people say, whoa, this is crazy. I'm just getting out. I don't know what's happening. And you get everyone just standing there crazy. So selling begets selling. Buying begets buying. But don't worry about it. It always rebounds. Have a nice weekend. Life is more precious than this. Go outside the weekend. It's going to be a relatively nice, I think, bit of weather on Saturday. Go out and just enjoy nature. And when I mean nature, I mean, you know, naturism. Get out there, you know, run through the woods naked. Just enjoy it, yeah? As long as you don't run through the woods at the back of my house, that's fine. But, you know, in your own backyard, yeah? Just enjoy that nature. Let them swing. If you're a lady, let them swing. If you're a fella, let them swing. Have a nice weekend. Speaking next week. I wonder what's going to happen over the weekend. Trump, I think he's delaying just to put boots on the ground. Who's he talking to? No one knows. Oh, he's talking to Iraq. He's talking the wall, basically. So, yep, good discussions. So that's Trump's, you know, definition of a good discussion. Just talking one way at somebody, at something. Could be a wall, could be anything, but good discussions. To him, that means he didn't answer back. He could talk for an hour and a half. Anyway, that's it. Have a nice weekend. Speaking next to Wiki. Don't forget, sharepickers.com. Soon I'll be covering the entire market, not just micro caps, thanks to the help of AI.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.